Views on this program are opinions of dental industry experts and not necessarily those of dentist advisors. Opinions shared in the following interview do not constitute personal financial advice. This program is furnished by Dentist Advisors, a registered investment advisor.
This is Dentist Money. Now, here's your host, Reese Harper.
Welcome to the Dentist Money Show, where we help dentists make smart financial decisions. I'm your host, Reese Harper, on site here at Yankee Dental Congress 2017 with a good friend, Dan Van Epps. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Reese. How are you?
Good, man. It's good to have a familiar face here this morning that I've spent a lot more time with you offset than onset.
Exactly.
This is our first onset experience.
Yeah, and now we're letting everybody else hear our conversations today. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, it gets recorded forever, and it's going to be on the internet, and it goes to thousands of people.
Nice.
So don't screw it up.
I'm not worried at all now.
See those two editors, producers over here? They'll cut out everything. Every time you start cussing and yelling at people, just kidding. If anyone knows Dan, you know that he doesn't do that. He's like one of the best guys that I've met over the last few years in the industry. So I'm excited to get your perspective on a lot of issues relating to dentistry, but in particular, you know, it's been a new startup venture, I guess you could call it that. But it's a pretty old company now. It mm-hmm. was a startup when we first started talking about it a few years ago. Tell me a little bit about how you got involved with Carr Healthcare Realty, the journey to get there, and kind of, I guess, the experience, what you're doing now.
Yeah, thanks. You know, my background, I've been in the dental industry now for probably over 16 years, but my first entree into it was really from a technology side. I had a technology company, and we did focused on healthcare, and then obviously migrated to primarily dental industry and had that great opportunity. But I was in that service industry for many years, and I was ready for a fresh new season. And at that time, had worked a lot in the Denver market. Our market carried throughout the Rocky Mountain region, and I got to know Colin Carr, our CEO, as a friend and even really as a partner in business, and realized the power of what their organization did for our doctors and did for us even, you know, as vendors and supporting us. And so that model worked in Colorado and was very successful. Transacted in Colorado in the last 7 years over 2,000 dental deals alone for doctors. And we talked about that a little bit more 2.5 years ago and really realized that model was needed across the country, and kind of created an opportunity to scale this thing and wanted to be a part of it. So I'm excited to
do this. Well, it's amazing how real estate is kind of the hub where a lot of things get done, right?
Yeah.
The real estate transaction, I mean, it's almost like many industries feed off of that essentially, right? I mean, it's where it's kind of the biggest decision that a doctor is going to make in his career is that location, or one of the biggest decisions, right? And it seems like it's the trigger point for a ton of other decisions to be made. So it feels like it's a hub for a lot of businesses to sort of interact with and network with. And
right.
What's been your experience in that?
Yeah, you know, it's obvious as you kind of think about the process for a doctor, especially if they're going to do a startup or maybe they're going to build their second office or look to expand. You know, one of those first few things besides finding a loan and seeing if you could actually afford it is to figure out where you're going to be, right? Yeah. Everybody always talks about location, 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 right, in real estate, but it's true in commercial real estate. It's true for the dentist is finding that ideal location, you know, being able to identify with the demographics, be able to find that proper location that they're going to really succeed in, which is a big part of what we do. Sometimes folks focus on that fact of being space finders, but that is an important aspect, obviously, of what we have to offer doctors, whether it's a piece of land they want to purchase, whether they're finally ready to build purchase a building. That's a big area right now. Docs are looking at having something besides just selling their practice someday to have an asset like that at the end of their career that they can sell or lease out in the future.
So. Yeah. What's your opinion on, a lot of people say, should I buy a space or should I lease a space? What do you usually tell people as they ask that question?
You know, I think it really, again, determines on every situation is different, right? Mm-hmm. Some docs are in a situation as a startup or even a relocation that they ideally would love to buy, but they're not in a financial situation to really do it, you know, and a lease option is going to give them the most flexibility and really financially give them the best leg up as they start their career. So in a case like that, you know, when they lease, we're able to do incredible negotiations with that landlord. We know that our doctors are the best tenants in the world. Right? Yeah. We educate those landlords on the fact. We understand that their leases are tend to be 7 to 10 years. A doctor, a lot of times, would like to retire in that same location if the landlord takes care of him, right? Yeah. So in a lease scenario, we can get a lot more concessions, right? There's a lot of build-out cost when it comes to a dental office with the plumbing and everything else that goes into that. If we can get those landlords to pay the bulk of those fees in our negotiations, give him more free rent, get him other concessions, allows him to stretch his loan dollars and now make a project that wouldn't work otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, for an established doctor, it may be the perfect time for him to look at buying versus leasing. He may have leased for the last couple times in his office space. He may be in a good financial situation, and he can afford even to do some of that build out on his own dollars and his own loan, and doesn't need that negotiation and money from a landlord. So, you know, our focus for doctors is not to just go down one path for them. If they say they want to lease, we're going to show them the areas they've targeted it, and we want to give them a full comparison of a lease versus a purchase. We want to let them see what their options are in the lease, what their options are in the purchase, tax advantages, talking to their financial advisors to help them through that process. But we feel like there's some great advantages to purchasing, but there's also some times that lease still makes the most sense financially.
Yeah. So. It seems like you bump into a lot of people that say, oh, you've got to buy your space. I mean, it's the best investment you'll ever make. Or you'll bump into people that say, you know, I think leasing is just more tax efficient. It's the best way to go. And I think you kind of hit it on the head. It seems like there's a balance. And if someone's chasing down purchasing as the priority rather than making location be the priority, and you can always get in trouble. I always coach clients out of buying a house or buying a rental property or buying a practice that's in a location that may not be optimal, right for their business or their life. Or I get nervous when I see people building homes or buying a house in an area and putting a lot of money into it that they may not be able to sell easily, right? Mm-hmm. It's a unique decision. There isn't a right or wrong answer, but don't get overly stressed out about whether you buy or lease. I think it's the main takeaway.
Exactly.
Let location drive it. Would you kind of advocate for that?
Yeah. How do you view it? Yeah, location obviously is a big factor in that. And you know, simple things that a lot of doctors don't always focus on, right, is parking, you know, and how that's going to affect the flow of our patients and signage, how important it is. You know, it's not just being on a great corner with visibility, but you got to look at the competition studies. You got to make sure you're looking at all those elements to make you successful. And if a doctor can create 25% more production because of a good location and even a good lease that's structured right, they're going to make a lot more money on that over a course of their career in some cases than they maybe would off of a purchase.
Yeah. So. Talk to me a little bit about when someone's looking to lease or purchase or find a space, I mean, what should they do before they go and talk to a broker?
Yeah, you know, I think we're a little biased in this case, but there's a lot of different realtors out there. Some folks even focus on the fact that they're healthcare specific. And, you know, we had to make a decision in our company very early in the fact that if we were going to go and represent just healthcare and specifically in the dental market, only doctors and representation, and that we feel like there's a very strong difference there. And in real estate, most real estate agents come into the industry because they want to represent landlords and need to represent landlords. That's their primary client in these situations. So if they are representing a doctor in that transaction and they've got 4 or 5 properties available, we think it's potentially a conflict of interest to have that broker representing the doctor and maybe putting him in a building that maybe not is the best location. It's going to allow him to succeed. And when they're in negotiations with that landlord, we don't think a doctor should be worried about his broker trying to not negotiate fully on this deal, because eventually he wants that landlord to be a client of his. So we drew that line early, and we felt like it was very important for doctors to know that they're the only one that's getting represented, that when they're looking for space, they're going to get the most successful space for me, negotiate the best terms for me, and make sure that I can succeed, not worried about the landlord side. So, you know, as people look for representation, I think that's important. There's very few companies like ours that do that focus, but we feel it's a very important distinction. But bottom line, doctors need to be represented. Yeah. And that's probably the bigger message in anything, is we find in some markets, it could be 60-80% doctors go unrepresented. You know, Reese, they drive down the road, they see a sign on a building, they call that phone number, they talk to a broker, and then they think, oh, I am getting represented. There's a broker on the end here. He said he can help me with all the needs I have. But again, now that broker's only representing the landlord.
Yeah.
You know, so that's an unfortunate spot that we see.
How many people do you think, I mean, I don't know if it's easy to tell this, and maybe the data is too hard to find, but maybe anecdotally you can kind of guess at it. How many dentists do you think, you know, do you think it's more common to go into a deal unrepresented than represented, or vice versa?
You know, it probably depends a little bit on the deal.
Okay.
If a doctor's going to do a new startup or a relocation, they will typically look for some representation. They think a little bit more about it in that regard, right?
Yeah.
They're thinking more like if you were going to buy a home, I would probably get a broker to represent me and go through that process, right? Where they don't consider it, and that's probably where those numbers get closer to 80%,
yeah,
is when they're leasing currently and their renewal comes up, right?
Okay.
They've been in this building. They've renewed a couple times already with a landlord. Landlord's their friend and buddy. They go to dinner. They think they have that trust built up, and they don't seek any representation in that case. And that's when they a lot of times lose hundreds of thousands of dollars off of those renewals and the negotiation. And you know, as we like to tell people, it's typically their second highest expense.
Yeah.
You probably know this better than I, but you know, that's an important part. You know, a lot of our dentists are focused on their merchandising part of their business, right? They're trying to save money every month off of that number, but they get one shot at what could be their second highest expense every 10 years.
Yeah.
And they don't have representation usually, in that negotiation.
So. That makes a lot of sense. If I mean, sometimes I like to put on the pitch me hat, we've been calling it in these interviews. You gotta sell me on something, because I'm this dentist, okay, will call me, and I'm in my lease, and all I'm thinking is, you know, I don't want to hire a broker because to re-represent me when I renew my lease, because it's just going to cost me money. He's going to get involved, and then my landlord's going to be like, you got a broker involved? And
yeah,
you know, I was just going to renew your lease for you. And then I don't want to get a broker involved because it's going to cost me more.
Right.
So that's how I'm thinking. That's my mindset. So help me understand, you know, your perspective on that.
Yeah. Well, let me define a little bit better how we get paid, right? Because that is a question that comes up in most cases with offices. And there are some companies out there that do charge for that service or have a monthly fee to it. But it's really not how real estate works, right? Just like we were talking about, if you sell a house, if you go to sell your house tomorrow, you're going to sign with a broker or a listing agent, and you're going to tell them, let's say it's 6%, I'm going to pay them 6% to sell my home. Now, if that broker can find the buyer and has nobody to represent that buyer, they're going to keep that full commission themselves.
They'll keep the full 6% themselves.
Right. Yep. But again, as we're saying, you got to have representation on the buyer side. So you hire an experienced broker, they represent you in the transaction, and now half of that commission then is just split, you know, to the buyer's agent. So the doctor's not paying anything more for that service. In fact, again, they're getting now somebody that's going to the table for them to help negotiate that deal.
Yeah.
And give you a great example. It wasn't that long ago, I was in an office. They called us in with a broker and asked us to talk about a second office location. That was the reason we came to the meeting. So we focused on the idea of, okay, where would the demographics be? Where's the best location for it? And as I'm sitting around in this office, I'm looking around saying, hey, you're in a great office here. How long you been here? Doctor says, oh, I've been here for 10 years. He says, I got a lease that's sitting on my desk. I got to sign next week, you know?
Yeah.
I said, well, doc, you know, you understand that we don't just go help you with your second office locations. A big part of what we do is to make sure you've got a good lease in front of you and help you with that lease negotiation. He said, well, you know, Dan, thanks a lot, but I'll be honest with you. He says, I've done my due diligence. I've been in business for a long time. He says, I was at $35 a square foot. He's in over 4,000, close to 5,000 square feet. He said, I went across the hall. I talked to a couple of the other tenants in the building. They're paying $34 to $35 a square foot, and the market's going up. And my landlord came back to me for a new 10-year lease. He's going to drop me all the way down to $33 a square foot. And you know the story. It's, you know, we go to dinner together. We're friends. This is what we do. And I said, Doc, just let us go through our due diligence and our process, which is different than what a lot of folks may do. There are other groups that, again, would just come in and try to reduce that rate and kind of pound on the landlord. We feel it's important that a doctor actually goes to market and really understands the value he is to landlords. And we go out and find opportunities for him that we can really represent him properly with the right leverage to that landlord. Well, we came back in this particular incident, and the doctor should have been paying $23 a square foot.
Wow.
So by the time we were done with all of our negotiations, we saved him over $400,000 on his 10-year lease that he was going to sign the very next week.
And, wow.
So that's obviously it's one great example. We have a lot of others.
That's just an average example.
Yeah, I got some other ones.
There's some better ones, but we don't want to accentuate.
You know, I would hate to sell our services, right?
Yeah. So that's interesting that in some cases I tend to be someone who pays for services. So my personality is I'm a little bit more liberal in my like ability or mm-hmm. maybe willingness to probably willingness more to because I don't think we don't all have an ability to pay for services because we all want to save our money. But I think some people have a willingness to sort of adopt a service provider mm-hmm. in whatever field of expertise they have. Mm-hmm. I think in real estate in particular, there's a lot of analysis that goes into a contract, and all real estate contracts are not created equal. Some right. are back of napkin signatures between you and the owner of a building, or right. some don't even have contracts
right.
for the space they're in.
Right.
And I just don't feel like contract analysis is, you know, it's something that isn't really... I mean, an attorney can obviously help you with it, but a real estate broker or professional is often able to do that with... You know, without charging you specifically for just contract review, they'll right. charge you to get a deal done, right?
Right?
So if I don't have, if I'm just in a space, and like in this case, there wasn't really a broker, right? It was the landlord who owned the building,
right?
And it was the doctor that right. is there. The doctor has to make the conscious choice to pay for that service, right? When you're able to bring him that savings, though, and say, "This is what we'll be able to save you." Obviously, there's a massive value there, right?
Yeah, but even in that negotiation, Reese, that's interesting because doctors do think I'm going to have to pay for that service,
yeah.
right? Somehow I'm going
to... They think that they're going to have to write a check. So
right.
explain how that
right.
worked, you know,
yeah.
for that doctor. Because
yeah.
I don't think people understand it real well.
Yeah, and again, you know, just like that landlord, if he was going to had three spots open in his building and was going to pay a commission like we talked about earlier,
yeah.
it's the same thing really applies in the renewal, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the landlord doesn't want to admit it always.
No. Nope.
We have to negotiate. Obviously through that process, but the reality is if that doctor left that space, that landlord would be in a situation where he'd probably not release it for 18 months.
Yeah, cost him way more.
And
so,
the opportunity is huge.
So you're able to come in and that landlord's able to pay you to out of his own pocket
mm-hmm.
to make this deal happen,
right.
and it keeps that tenant in his building for him.
Exactly.
I don't think people quite understand that. I
mm-hmm.
think that sometimes they feel like bringing in a real estate broker is just going to be a check they have to write out of their own pocket. But,
right.
but in most cases, that is something the landlord's going to pay for.
Right.
And in some cases, even if they did have to pay for it themselves, in the rare case that mm-hmm. that happens, there's still a massive value there.
Right.
And I think it's good to get a second opinion on a lease renewal.
Right.
I mean, why
right.
not? You know?
Well, I'll give you an example. I had a doctor in our Detroit market, a consultant had asked us to get involved, help them out. She had called back and said, "No, we don't really need your services. I was able to renegotiate the lease myself. Felt really good about what we've done and where we're going." The consultant came back to us later and said, "Boy, I really wish she would have worked with you." She was so excited because the landlord approached her and said, "You know what? I normally would pay a real estate agent a certain commission to help with the deal, but since you're going to negotiate yourself, I'll go ahead and give that percentage to you and cut you a check for that just so that we can work this thing together." So she was quite proud of herself, thought that was a great solution. She saved maybe $5,000 or $6,000 in this particular transaction. The consultant came back to her later and said, "Well, you know, how many, what did you get in free rent for that renewal?" She said, free rent? You can get free rent negotiated on a renewal. And he says, well, did you get any TI dollars because you wanted to build out that additional space? And she said, no. She says, that's all on me. So that particular lease, we think she probably lost $120,000 to $130,000 over a 10-year lease.
But felt like she walked away.
Just because it's not something she's ever done and will never do.
It's so interesting. I think financial decisions are very... People feel good about financial decisions in a very subjective way,
right?
Whether it's taxes that you paid, whether it's a real estate transaction or investment returns, because there's not an, if you don't have something to quantifiably compare it to, then sometimes you can feel like things are good decisions even when they're bad.
Right.
Like your taxes, maybe your particular tax advisor recommended you do something that lowered your taxes. So that feels good because it was less than what you were going to pay. So relative to what you knew, it felt better.
Right.
But if you went to another tax advisor, that tax advisor would have lowered it even more.
Right.
And but because you didn't have something to compare it to, you just felt good.
Exactly.
Same thing with real estate.
Right.
Same thing with investment returns. It's like my account went up. I had a good year. I made returns.
Right.
You know, I got 5.5%. Well, maybe the market was up 11.5%, and you know and it's just hard to know when if you don't have objective comparisons. So that's why it's really important that in your process you guys go out to market, you bring data back to the table and say, here's what your options are if you were to leave, if you were to relocate, if you were to buy space. I mean, giving that dentist a benchmark to start comparing to allows them to emotionally like disconnect for a minute from the space they're in and say, what's the best thing for my practice? It's just so important.
And what's interesting to me is we've been tracking our results. We're currently transacting on about 800 deals across the country currently. And of those deals that we deal with renewals, almost a fourth, sometimes even close to 30% in certain markets, actually end up relocating instead of staying. And their whole intention was to stay, and in some ways could have made sense, but the landlord wouldn't negotiate. A new landlord wanted them, made too great of an offer and opportunities. The doctor could finally expand. You know, they were in 3 ops, and they finally could now get to the 6 ops they wanted. They're finally in a better location, again, with parking and visibility. And the minute they moved and they proceed in the next year or two, their production's up 20-25%. Staff's excited about the new facilities and opportunities and growth, and so those are exciting opportunities that doctors don't even think about sometimes as they go into that negotiation.
So true. And it only happens once, twice, three times in a career, sometimes 4 times, depends, 5. I mean, it's a very small handful of times that you're going to go through this process, and you've got to get it right. Because it is the difference in your net worth. It could make hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe even as much as $1 million of difference in your net worth by the time you retire. So it's a really important decision. And even if you own a space and you have invested in that space, sometimes staying in that space may not always be the right thing to do. I know that's an extreme kind of position to take. And in most cases, people would never think of leaving a space that they owned, especially if it was in a good location. But I've seen people buy real estate that was the wrong location, put tons of money into it, and force themselves to stay there for 20 years just because they made the decision to buy the wrong space.
Right.
And at some point, you got to cut your losses and move on because it's not about owning real estate. Okay. It's about doing $1 million, $2 million, $3 million in production. It's about growing your revenue. And you're going to need to do that in order to retire effectively and grow your net worth and get to a comfortable place. Right. And I just think that a lot of people let the emotional side of real estate kind of be almost a set of shackles, you know, and it really needs to just be less of an emotional decision.
Right.
It's got to be a financial one.
Right.
And I think that real estate just can cause people to really hurt themselves in cases. So.
Well, you bring up a great point is, as we go through the process with our doctors, we might start off with 60 different locations initially, based on their criteria, where they want to be and the criteria that they have. But when we get to the point of narrowing that down to maybe their top 12, we narrow it again down to three or four, the best locations for them. We tell them exactly that. Don't fall in love, right? We're not buying a house that you're going to have to fall in love with. We're not going to just pursue one option in this negotiation. We need to deal with those three or four because we don't know yet what opportunities we're going to get in the negotiation, right?
Yeah,
by the time we're all done with the negotiation, now we'll best be able to decide what our number one, number two is. But until then, don't fall in love because it is a business decision.
So. Yeah, no, that's great. That's great insight. Are there any stories that come to mind, kind of some mistakes that you've seen doctors make that have caused them trouble? Anything that kind of comes to mind of examples of cases where you feel like this is a common mistake that we see, and here's an example of where it's played out?
Yeah, the biggest one I see from the renewal side that I was talking about earlier is timing. Again, because the doctors don't think about that renewal, it's not on their radar. The landlord, though, is very much aware of what timing it is, right? So a doctor's been in that space for 7 or 10 years, and what a landlord will typically do is 2 to 3 months out, they'll slide a new lease to that doctor.
Yeah.
And what is he going to do then, right? He doesn't have an opportunity to really check the market out and to look unless he's going to deal with a lease that has expired. And now he feels stuck. He's going to have to sign that lease.
Most people probably don't realize that that's too late.
Right.
Okay. Let's clarify that real quick for people. So 2 or 3 months out, just so you know, it's not enough time to get this done.
Exactly. Right?
That was the subtle part of that comment.
So taking it back, you know, we want doctors looking at 18 months at least to 12 months. And depending on what their goal is, if it's to really look at real estate, maybe to buy a building, we want them to make sure 18 months out that we have that opportunity. Again, find the right location, get the right team around them, put them in the right position so the negotiation and the posture can give them the most success in the transaction. They have options.
Yeah, that's really good. Any other mistakes that come to mind? You'd say, okay, timing's a big one. What's another mistake that you guys see that you try to coach people away from?
You know, as I mentioned a little bit before, too, falling in love with a specific space, but getting focused too much on a certain location as the only solution for them. You know, we think it's important financial decision, but it's also a lifestyle issue as well. And we'll have some doctors that tell us, well, just put us anywhere in a location to make us successful. Drop me in and tell me where that'll be. And we'll find that some of them are an hour and a half drive from the brand new home that they purchase is where they want us to start looking for an office for them. To me, that's a mistake. And it may not always be reflected in just the financial side of it, but it's also the ability to have the style of living, the type of living you want. And when you're traveling 3 hours a day to go to an office, that could be an issue.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to some of the other, you know, mistakes, some of it is timing. Some of it is the thought that they're going to get a good deal from my landlord. We're friends, we're buddies. And some of them the landlords aren't necessarily trying to take advantage of the doctors. Some of them have legitimately didn't understand the market. You know, they own one building. They felt like the rates were continually going up, and that education helped them consider the deal, and they understand the doctor's in the right position.
Yeah, that's good insight. I think that's crucial. Has there been anything inside of contracts that you see that are kind of gotcha moments or things where doctors didn't really realize, you know, what they were signing that kind of create problems for them?
You know, I think, you know, one area sometimes is they don't even understand the additional costs that go into some leases, right? We've had doctors that have signed a lease and didn't realize they had no free rent. And the reality was they started paying for that lease at signing, and then they still had the construction process. They had a lot of things, and they're paying on at least from day one. They should have negotiations to make sure that they're getting free rent from that landlord typically until at least they have that door open and they can see patients. Sometimes we can even extend it beyond that, but that's an area of negotiation that gets left when doctors are, again, are trying to do it on their own or maybe working with some other folks. Again, assignability is something as simple as that. Some docs are going into a lease towards their end of their career, and they're going to want to sell that practice. And that lease is going to be an important thing that the buyer is going to be looking at. They want the assignability of that lease. That doctor doesn't want to sell his practice and still be on the hook for that lease long term.
Yeah.
So they need people to be looking at those parts of the lease. And then the overall, again, negotiations of the lease, the amount of build out cost, again, for these projects are very large, and some landlords don't understand the value, again, of what they're doing, of why they would want to help their tenant in pay out of that space. But the reality, it's going to lift the value of that building for the landlord. And again, they're going to have the best tenant in that space for the next 10 years or more. And that education is critical.
Well, so. I think that it probably, you know, if I'm in a space that's already been finished and I've, you know, I feel like there's not necessarily, a lot of doctors are probably ready to re-sign even without getting any tenant improvement dollars. But if you were to look across the street at a new space that maybe is just being put up, and there was $30, $40, $20 to $50 that could be negotiated potentially in tenant improvement expenses, and then you're able to bring that back to your landlord and say, look, if I move across the street, I'm getting like a brand new build out.
Mm-hmm.
Does that change the discussion a lot of times with landlords? I mean, do landlords, it seems like in my experience, they just assume that there won't be any tenant improvement dollars put towards a lease renewal.
Right.
It's not something that they want to do.
Right.
And
right.
So,
right.
But and if the doctor's not presenting them with data and with options,
exactly,
it's really hard for a landlord to take them seriously, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Right. And they really have to know that they will move and can move, right?
It's got
to
be a legitimate decision.
That data is there. It isn't simply, you know, we're fighting over a dollar or two off of his lease. They really have to understand why a dentist needs to have a certain space, what the differences, again, with parking and signage, what that would make, and the opportunities that he has to move and will move.
Yeah.
We have to be able to have that posture as well.
Yeah, so. And you've got to be able to talk to the landlord about how a space configuration, right, mm-hmm. in that new space could help improve your revenue. Mm-hmm. It could help improve your profitability, and it's a meaningful change to your net worth.
Right.
I mean, if it's just an empty or hollow threat that you're going to leave, the landlord's not going to take you seriously, and you're not going to be able to negotiate effectively.
Right.
I mean, it has to be a real data-driven, real discussion. And I think let's talk a little bit about the power of representation, not just in real estate, but in a lot of decisions. Why is it important to not make every decision on your own, like directly negotiating and directly engaging from your perspective?
You know, I've always been an advocate. You mentioned earlier about paying for services, right? My thought is a lot of times the same thing. It's I'll get what I pay for, right, mm-hmm. in some of those regards. But I've realized early in my career, as I've done three different startups really over the years, that there's expertise that I will never have, and quite frankly, in some cases, don't want to have.
Yeah.
and to have that expert representing to me to avoid the pitfalls that I might put in place, but also the loss of revenues or dollars because they are an expert in what they're doing is so critical. And, you know, same thing in this environment as we look at that opportunity. You know, again, they're not going to do this very often in their career.
Yeah.
They got a couple of top opportunities to do that. The key is going to be to really have that kind of representation in the process. And we live in this world, right, in the dental area. I tell dentists many times is, you know, I love my children, and I'm going to make sure a good oral surgeon is there to deal with an extraction.
Yeah.
I want that specialist working on my kids and making sure they have the best specialist to take care of them. Why wouldn't they want that same specialist in all areas of their business to help them grow?
I think that's really good insight. And I like to do a lot of research on the psychology behind decision making. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in the behavioral side of mm-hmm. decision making. And it seems like, especially when it comes to financial issues, real estate's a big one. When people are negotiating or making decisions with their own money on their own behalf, they don't have the same objectivity. They don't have the same, they can't disconnect from those emotions.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I've seen doctors cling to a space because it's a mile from their home,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
When the space that they were in was clearly hurting them,
mm-hmm.
it's just that their children had come and had lunch so many times
right.
in that break room with them, or, you know, they had their wife was able to pop in and say hi, that it was just really hard to, like, without someone coming to them and presenting them data and information that allowed them to see the financial consequence of their decision, it's just really hard to sort of disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that happening with real estate in particular, you know, not just your practice location, but your house, your second home, a vacation property. Those things can be very emotional, mm-hmm. you know, and hard to make the right decision, the right financial decision. And I'm not saying that the right financial decision is always the most profitable, or it'll always make you the most money. Sometimes you don't care, and you just mm-hmm. want to be a mile from your mm-hmm. home, and you're mm-hmm. not willing. There's no amount of money mm-hmm. that you could save that would make you care to relocate. But if it causes you to retire at 71, then maybe you would rethink it, right? Or if it causes you to push your work life out later than you want to, because maybe you want to work till you're 75. Mm-hmm. But if it causes you to delay other important decisions, you at least want to be aware of that.
Right.
If your investment portfolio is too expensive, but it's being managed by your brother-in-law, and you just don't want to hurt his feelings, mm-hmm. or if your taxes are being prepared by your dad, and you just don't want to have his feelings hurt because, you know, you need to have your taxes prepared by someone else, or if your legal work's being done by a spouse, and they don't have the proper expertise. I mean, there's just all of these things that they're very hard to disconnect from.
Yeah.
And I feel like real estate is one of those that, without someone getting in between you and your emotions, it's very hard to make the right decision. Because you don't have the information, and B, it's difficult to break away from the emotional connection you have with right. things, right? Right?
And we see doctors all the time that, again, are so worried about that relationship with the landlord, right? You know, they go into it thinking, I don't want that to be damaged. You know, I have a good relationship with them. Landlords, some of them are very intelligent. They realize that they become patients of the doctor yeah. in many cases, right? So totally. So now I'm not just dealing with my landlord, but I'm dealing with my patient.
I'm not going to host him.
How can I be in conflict with them?
Yeah.
And that's the best thing they can do, is separate themselves, right? Once they've hired somebody to represent them, now they have a safe distance from that transaction, yeah. right? If somebody now that's interacting with them, we can be the bad guy and,
totally.
And make sure they're taken care of and realize they have that separation. And we think that's very healthy for them. So
what are some characteristics when you look to hire? I know you're responsible for a lot of your national growth and a lot of the hiring of your brokers. And tell me what you look for in a broker that's going to be able to be successful in terms of personality traits, temperament, mm-hmm. and experience. I'm just curious, and I think people would be curious to know, what makes a great real estate broker?
You know, it's interesting you asked that question, because when we first started our expansion, the initial focus that I had was we were going to hire existing real estate agents, right? That made the most sense, maybe, to go into a market and hire somebody that's already licensed, that's been in that market before. But we realized very quickly that, again, our focus on just being tenant-only, doctor-only representation, and also understanding what the dental needs are, which are very different,
yeah.
and the negotiations are very different. We took a very different approach. So we look, again, as it always is for me, it starts with integrity and the people skills that somebody has, right? They
yeah.
have to sit in front of me and be able to connect with me and sell me on them, because that relationship is critical as we go into the industry. We're working
yeah.
with other vendors that we need to develop that trust with, but that doctor needs to know that this person representing him is going to do it at that highest level of integrity, and the drive is there for that person to make sure they're represented. I love it when somebody gets excited when we start talking about how we can save a doctor hundreds of thousands of dollars and change his life in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I see that light bulb go on, and they're excited because they're going to represent that doctor. They're not just going to sell something. They're actually going to do something for a doctor and represent and fight for them
yeah.
and make a big difference in their life. So those are the people that we've looked at. And we also have hired a lot of people that are from the industry. So I feel like, who's the best real estate agent who's looked at and maybe worked as a merchandising rep or an equipment rep or maybe a manufacturer rep or been in the industry? Who knows better what space to be looking for a dentist than somebody who knows how to lay out that office and
yeah.
knows where the ops should be and realizes, again, things like parking and signage and all the things that go into that, and can make sure we put together the best team in each of our markets so the doctor will succeed?
Well, that's great insight, Dan. I really appreciate you taking the time and kind of clarifying a lot of these hard to digest issues. Tell me, is there any parting words that you'd like to leave here before we part ways?
No, again, I would just say get representation. That's kind of the bottom line. And it doesn't have to be car health care. We think you should be looking for that. We have a lot of opportunity across the country to represent deals with local representation, which is a real big piece of that. But ultimately, find representation. Make sure you have somebody. You wouldn't go into a courtroom without having a lawyer represent you.
Yeah.
Don't go into any real estate transactions without having expert representation.
That's great insight, Dan. I really appreciate it. And as always, man, it's great to hear your tone and attitude about the industry. You're a big advocate for dentists out there, and I really appreciate all the hard work you put into everything.
Thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
We'll have you back on soon. Thanks, Dan.